Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy,
presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
Hi, welcome. We have a very, it feels like an after-school special, but a very special interview today with three brilliant members of our legislature here in Oklahoma. I'm so happy we could capture all three of them for a little bit on this Friday in the summer, because some may think, but we know it's not true, that their work doesn't end after signee die. And so we're so happy that we have leader-elect Melissa Provenzano today.
Hello.
And then we have Democratic leader, Senator Julia Kurt here today. And then we have the newly elected chair of the Oklahoma Democratic Party, Representative John Waldron, with us. And so, it's just like the coolest thing to have everybody here, because what's important to Arnold and I think, for the next couple months and into, 2026, is to really kind of, like we were just discussing offline, was kind of blow as much oxygen as we can into what we all feel is kind of a renewed energy for Democrats specifically, but maybe even for voters that aren't Democrat. Democratic in the state of Oklahoma. So today we're going to gather all of our thoughts and start talking about what's next, because we now have brand new spanking leadership with the state Democratic Party. That whole process revealed a lot of the problems, to be polite, of the state Democratic Party over the past couple years. And then we have, of course, I'm doing the intro that we said we weren't going to do, but the soon to be outgoing leader of the House Dems, Cindy Munson, is running for governor, which is huge. And so, we're like excited that we have a really, dynamic, energetic Democratic candidate for governor in the state. Not to say the rest of them weren't, but she's, special. And then, so all of our party leaders are here, and we're really, really happy to have them all in the same place at the same time. So, so where are we at right now to the three of you? I'm just going to leave it wide open like that to get the conversation started. Really broad.
Ladies first.
Oh, there we go. Yep. You never thought you'd hear this group silent before.
But... No, I just made it really broad and unproductive.
A brief moment. I'll hop in just because I've already been, since I've been in my role now, suddenly longer than the other folks in the room. This is Julia Kurd, and I'm, we've been doing the work, and I think that it's so exciting to have the collaboration we're going to have, because really the only way that we're going to shift this supermajority toxic leadership environment is through incredibly strong collaborative work. And, a supermajority isn't going to stop itself. We have to do the best work, and we have to work together to strengthen each other. And we have to truly believe change is possible. And I know we have that with the leaders we have in place. And, humans are not easy to work with. It's hard, difficult. We're hard to work with. And so setting up systems over the last few years, as the Senate Dems try to rebuild our campaign infrastructure that all fell apart when we lost the majority, is just that day-to-day work of trying to have those systems in place that are going to be good. And we're seeing the fruits of that already. So I just want to lead with that putting in the work, putting in place systems is already paying off in people approaching us about running for office, us being ready and available for that and helping people. So I just want to begin with a little bit of optimism about work already underway for the next elections.
Great. Agreed.
Yeah, I want to second that. It's really exciting. In the campaign for chairman of the Democratic Party, I had to travel all over the state, and it was not uncommon to see Democrats showing up and Chickasha or Bartlesville or Ada or Stigler in double the usual numbers. And I found a couple of candidates who want to run for office in Osage County, that's been amazing. A long time. last happened. And we are finding that people are fired up and ready to do something. And that's all before the big bad bill hits Oklahoma. I think it's an historic opportunity for Democrats to reverse decades of gains, decades of losses, and maybe restore balance to politics in Oklahoma.
Right. And I would have to echo both of their sentiments, but say, this is unusual, all three of us in these roles in one spot. And I think, hopefully I know it speaks to their intent and mine that, not only can we be more efficient and effective, but their will is here. And I have to say, looking forward, I know we can look backwards, but I don't know that that's particularly helpful at the moment, but looking forward, we're all ready. Because where financially we can all collaborate in the most ethical way, but like why are we reinventing the wheel three different times? And I think just so delighted to have everyone's interests align.
So we know obviously that resources, financial resources are, and people resources are not infinite that we're dealing with here. Ideally, I think all of us around this podcast would agree that a major party ought to have an operation and a presence, a real in all 77 counties of this state. I don't know if that is reasonable or not. I don't know if that is ultimately the immediate goal or whether it's a long-term goal. But it does seem to me that we have seen some strategies for the way forward, and I'm curious how this factors in, if at all, to what you guys are thinking of advancing the ball for Democrats and for progressive public policy. And that is to, create situations where you may not win in some of the rural, more rural areas, but if you can close the gap enough, you can make a difference overall statewide in Oklahoma on races like the governor's race, or even in an Oklahoma county, in the 5th congressional district with the Gina Nelson running, taking on Stephanie Bice.
What? I'm sorry.
What are you talking about?
That
This
hasn't been
is
announced
Friday.
yet.
This is
That's
the day before
tomorrow.
the announcement.
Yeah,
So
as of
I'm
recording,
not revealing any secrets,
not
and it's not
public
going to be broadcast
information.
till afterwards. Sorry,
Well, then
Adam
it's not
Zane. I
the
didn't really let the cat out of the bag. Yay,
end.
Merry Christmas.
We've
Oh.
scooped it all. Yeah, no.
Man. Well, I can say that, I saw John travel statewide, but I also spent a lot of time connecting with places that I hadn't even connected with that we have to go into and saying, listen, through the county parties, through the state party, if you want a legislative update, no matter when it is, we're going to find somebody to put in that room because we have been absent from county parties. And
Right.
that's, so if you're in Hoochatown, southeastern Oklahoma, we need to be willing to drive to come see you. I mean, and so I think, just the having the political will to be more visible. And so folks feel like, yes, you're valued and I'm willing to drive out here is a tone that's been set that we've got to continue.
Yeah, and that extra effort to be present and be available in more places. I mean, we started these town halls that we're doing outside of our districts because, in places that are represented by Democrats, I've seen a real commitment on the part of our members in the House and Senate for the Democrats to have public events, be accessible, be responsive. I mean, they're out there. It's not always the case with Republicans in the legislature. So we have made an effort as a caucus to be more accessible publicly beyond our district. So we've been doing events outside of our district. Had bang up events in Eastern Oklahoma County. Lawton has been great, some of those other areas, with the intention of how do you make sure people have someone coming to them? And it made a big difference. People were very thrilled to have us closer, to hear directly from us, and to feel like they're not forgotten, especially when they're represented by someone whose policies, you talk to people in Lawton, they're represented by Senator Dusty Devers, who's presenting some of the most awful legislation, policy that really hurts people. And that's who their senator is. And he's also not responsive to them when they ask him questions or ask for help. So, like, just being able to show up regularly for people has been really meaningful. And I hope it begins to show that commitment as we expand that, as ODP's effective at that, and as the House is doing that as well. I just think people are going to see Democrats more present and feel more like we're part of the community. Because I don't think that volunteers are I think volunteers have been burned out. Volunteers are not participating. We know that's true with voters, that we really have a voter participation problem more than anything. And part of that is just demoralization and feeling overrun by a supermajority state.
Yep.
Okay, so question, do we feel like about that, do we feel like our voting process is transparent and accessible enough to remedy that through just get out the vote processes, or do we need to do make any changes to I know it would be hard to make it, you know, more early voting, things like that. Like, what are your take on that? Because that, I feel like that's like the last step, right? Like building awareness, but then like making it so people can get to the polls. You know, what do you all think about that?
I was in Las Vegas this week for a meeting of party chairs from the Midwestern region, and that somehow included Oregon, where they have mail-in voting and automatic registration at the when you get your driver's license. So they have a 75% participation rate in their elections. We require every little thing. We'll happily scrub you out of the off the voting rolls. We'll require you to notarize your absentee form. We'll do all kinds of things in the name of preventing voter fraud. But the only time we care about voter participation, it seems to be, is when we want to move school board elections to time with to tie in with the presidential election, so that hardcore MAGA voters will be able to elect our school board members. That's not a great recipe, and we have a lot of education work to do to get Oklahomans to understand the existing voting laws and to participate.
I think there's.
I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just think of every election night, general election night, where you look at the districts, specifically the rural districts, you know, and you see sitting members of the legislature booted, and there's not even, you know, there's barely four digits of voter turnout, you know, in a district that has 37,000, 80,000 people in it, you know? And so like what is the root of that? Is it lack of awareness? Are the precincts placed in places that are inaccessible? You know, questions like that. Like,
all of the above. I mean, I think you're all of the above, like, but I just got to point out, and this is obvious, I know, but like those in power are not going to change it.
Right.
You know, one of the last remaining real citizen voices is an initiative petition. And there's been a nonstop attack on it, you know, this year being one of the worst. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it may get stopped by the court system. But what we see is them trying to limit voices. So they are not going to pass bills that improve access. And we've even seen, you know, they're undermining their own voters. They've made it harder to vote absentee, include. Mm-hmm. And the people who are going to be affected are older Oklahomans, seniors.
No, I distinctly remember in 2020, you know, that spring, and we're in the middle of COVID, and I was like tweeting at the former floor leader of the House, saying, you know, what can we do to make people feel safe going to vote in the primaries this year? And they're like, oh, we're on it. We're aware of this. We're going to take care of it. And then they made it absolutely harder. Yeah. You know, they introduced like the notary process. I mean, they made it so much harder to actually vote. So I get that. So is it just like on the ground, you know, what is it? Souls to the polls type, you know, outreach at the district level? Or
I think we... I think you have Exhibit A in the 2024 elections in the Tulsa area. I mean, we have a real problem with voter apathy. What am I going to vote for? You know, in the primary, there's no Democrat to vote for. And, you know, why should I show up? And in the general, you know, it's easy to kind of forget. And you see large droves of independents and Democrats becoming Republicans so they can have a voice in the primary. And so you get less crazy, but somehow that hasn't worked. And so what's going on? And, you know, we've got to give them what they had in Tulsa was this real energy, because Democrats finally had a choice to make. You know, and you saw the voter turnout in Tulsa increase, like in my own race. You know, I won by more than I ever have. And you had Monroe and Karen Keith on the ballot, and it was everyone knew about it. And I think there's an apathy. And the question that we as Democrats have to ask is, why aren't you going? I don't think the first question is, hey, let's get more people registered. It's not it. I think it's, why aren't you showing up? You know, and so I don't think we need to invest money in registering voters. We need to invest money in finding out why people don't give a rip to vote because they don't feel like it impacts them.
Well, and getting out there, because you see what happened. I mean, Tulsa had a coordinated field strategy, and you had people knocking on doors all over that county, all over the city. I mean, it's night and day, those areas where they had a state legislative race and a Senate race and a county commissioner race
Bingo.
and a mayor's
Bingo.
race. Like
When
all
we
those people were talking to voters, that matters.
and Republicans came in third in that mayoral race.
Right. And I think about what's coming for 2026, and you think about the June primary and I'm sorry, the minimum wage vote that's going to be on the June primary. And if there was a way that we as Democrats could capitalize on that, but you know, the way is, you know, you have Democrats, but then you have two Democrats, and well, we don't want to fight each other, but by God, we need to raise awareness.
Well, you know,
And
what
so,
you, but that whole thing about, I think we need to be less scared of primaries on our side.
yeah,
I mean, like
I agree.
this to me ties to the what was brought up about the ODP race is it's okay for us to have races. This is an awkward politics. It's important that we have debate and discussion and talk about the issues. I think we just have a real challenge around everyone taking it personally and it all big personal attack when actually this is the endeavor. We've got to talk about what we care about and what our priorities are. So I'm curious your perspective on that, John, having come through both an electoral and then doing this internal, you know, only Democratic voters thing. Like, what was your experience of that? And do you think, I don't know, do you think it's indicative of dysfunction or do you think it's just about people not knowing how to approach things?
Well, first of all, I'll say there's no crazier election than a party election. And
Ain't no
it's
party like an ODP party.
that's right. I mean, they're high
Yeah.
information. They have a lot to tell you, and you got to do a lot of listening. But in a lot of ways, it's not that different from a regular campaign. You go around and talk to everybody, and they gradually teach you what it is that they need. The thing about the party election this year was there were a lot of people at the convention who were brand new. I think it reflected that there's this traditional core of activists who have been the backbone of the party for a long time, but there was a big wave of pragmatists in the mix this time who were like, how are we going to win elections? We got to do something about this, and we have to have candidates in our counties. And that brought a lot of new energy to the convention this year. But to speak to your campaigning question, it's still always about three things: making your introduction, establishing a context that builds a bridge to the voters, and then making the ask, getting them to commit to your vision. And the vision we committed to, I think, at the convention this year was we want to win some elections.
Do you get the sense that, you know, going statewide like you did in your campaign for Oklahoma Democratic Party chair was a game changer by itself? Like actually asking people for their vote.
Yeah,
Simple.
well, we had three candidates, and I want to shout out to Kevin Dawson, who put, I think, 9,000 miles on his car during the campaign. It showed up at just about every county event, and I didn't put in 9,000. I certainly put a lot of time on the Subaru in this race, and that does a good thing. I mean, to speak to Melissa's point. If you give people a choice, they get interested, they get involved, they get energized. And we had great choices in the race this year. And that got people talking and it got people thinking about the future. So the election, yeah, there were some tricky things about it, but it also brought a lot of good energy to the party that I'm hopeful will carry forward into the election season, which, as we all know, started yesterday.
So this is it's kind of got my wheels turning a little bit because I'm just, you know, I think we're all thinking about like what could work on the ground here in our state. You know, a pretty entrenched urban rural like sides, I would say, or mentality. I don't know if that's the reality, but But I'm just thinking of, Representative Provenzano, what you're saying about giving people a choice, right? Like, and then just the idea of primarying and having multiple Democratic candidates on the ticket. And I'm thinking honestly about the New York City mayoral race and what we've seen there. And we have a candidate that won the ranked choice, completely like blew out Andrew Cuomo, who was like the establishment candidate, I guess, despite all his warts and terrible background. But you have Mondani who wins out, and now he's coming up against the Republican, but he was a clear choice. So when we're talking about giving them a choice, as candidates, do we give them clear choices, clear differences, stop kind of messing around with like, the ambiguity of not creating daylight between the Republican choice and the Democratic choice, but having clear Democratic principles, not trying to say we're like, Republicans with a D behind our name, which honestly, 12 years ago, that's what it was for all of Eastern Oklahoma. They were Republicans, but they called themselves Democrats, right? So, I mean, is this what we're looking for in like the next round of candidates that we, hope to place statewide or, more like substantially across the state? Or do we think, or is it something different than that?
I think we have to think a little differently. Right now, we're thinking like an urban party and a college town party. And if we want to think like a statewide party, then we need to have issues that have statewide reach. We've got some great ones. Minimum wage is going to be on the ballot. Minimum wage makes a much bigger difference in small towns than it does in Tulsa, where Quick Trip is already paying above that. And people are still having a hard time living. But minimum wage in Guthrie, that's a big deal. If we bump that number up, that means families can actually support themselves. We
And
have to have
imagine.
other, yeah,
Oh,
imagine that.
yeah. Well, I mean, just imagine if we had candidates on the Democratic ticket for them to pick from as well.
Right.
Would
Well, we
that help?
almost won in Shawnee last year. With a little more support, we could do that. And there's other examples where we came in close. What if we took up renewable energy as a source of rural investment and added that to our support for public schools in small towns and our support for health care everywhere when rural health care is about to take a big hit with the Medicaid Sooner Care cuts? We start to have a slate of issues. I talked to a woman in Sealing today, though, who said, Democrats have just, they don't come anymore. My husband's uncle is 87 years old. He's like the last Democrat in the family. And people aren't talking about the price of wheat, which is a huge issue for us out here. And when you talk about immigration, I think about the impact that'll have in Guymon, at the plants there, or out in Eastern Oklahoma, where the big chicken industry uses a lot of immigrant labor. That's going to be hard for the farm sector if we continue to follow the path we're following, and that's going to hit rural communities hard. Our congressional legislation is all keen to follow that president in the White House, but it's going to be Democrats who are pointing out how those policies are hurting rural Oklahoma. And we've got to do that. And we got to talk like a statewide party again if we want to have an impact out there. And yeah, maybe we aren't going to win right away, but if we cut Cindy Munson's losses in the Panhandle or in Ardmore, if we reduce the margins on the other side, then her advantage in the cities helps and we do a lot better. So yeah, we got to have a statewide strategy, and that's why I'm excited to know so well Representative Provenzano and Senator Kurt and Leader Munson. We're a team. We all know each other, and we've been working together for years. We could run a campaign like a team.
Yeah, I want to go back to your kind of question about the spectrum of candidates. And, a lot of people want to have a conversation about, who's more progressive, who's more moderate, are they compromising? And I think, this is a real challenge. And I've talked to my co Democratic colleagues across the country. Like, I mean, we purity tests don't work for the broader community. And I think the challenge is how we both strengthen the Democratic candidates and Democratic values, but don't make it all about labels, because I think that's a lot of what people are pushing back against. When I knock doors, everybody I've talked to, whether it's rural or urban, there's so many people that don't identify with the binary two-party system. And I think we're going to have that interesting balance of both trying to emphasize Dems as great and as a great alternative. But at the same time, that can't be the whole message at all, because people are listening to national storylines and they're going to box us into national storylines if we do that. So I think it has to be about what problems are we solving? Who are our priority? And looking at that first. And so, you know, when we talk about, you know, when we talk about my caucus really wanted to talk about prosperity this year. And I had real challenges with that because I want to make sure we weren't implying that we only care about wealthy folks, that we make sure we're talking about clearly that we're talking about all families being able to be comfortable financially. We're not talking about everybody being wealthy. And so it's that some of those discussions around those words and how we communicate to the broader public to make sure they know where we stand. To me, it's about values and that we aren't going to be 100% aligned on every single vote. This is a challenge in our caucuses always, because, you know, when it comes down to it, you may think that you understand exactly how Democrats vote. I'm saying that with quotes around it, but it's complex. And I talk to people all the time that have differing vote patterns, but might have similar integrity and values. Yeah. And I think we have to focus around that.
Well, it does seem to me that we're at a precipitous moment here between what probably will have taken root by this time next year because of the policies out of D.C. And the impact of those in a state that relies so heavily on federal money coming back to the state like we do.
Yeah.
And it's also possible, I think we would all understand this, that as many people who are running in the Republican primary for governor, that it would not be shocking if you had a Republican runoff in late August of next year that had Gentner Drummond, the attorney general, and Ryan Walters, the superintendent of schools, mm-hmm. squaring off in what is, you know, if passed as prologue, would seem to favor an extreme candidate beyond anything we've probably seen in a long time in Oklahoma, if ever. But it creates opportunities for someone like, you would think, if someone like a Ryan Walters, you know, and there are plenty of those folks in the legislature who are going to be running again now, that, you know, that would create opportunities for Democrats to say, you know, these guys, you know, they're total ideologues. They're not getting things done. What have they done to help you? Here's what we suggest. Here's how we would approach. Everybody, you know, we're all in this together. We all need to help the rising tide lift all boats. But yeah, this seems to be a great moment that might accelerate this whole process of bringing Oklahoma back to a saner place. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong? Am I Pollyanna about this? I know it's a slog. It's not as easy as it is.
It's not a single cycle. This won't happen in a single cycle.
No. And you know,
but I think you're right about it being an important moment. I mean, I've read Oklahoma political history, and the 75 years that Republicans were trying to navigate a supermajority of Democrats, mm-hmm. The only times they made gains is when the national winds blew in their favor and they were ready for it. So I read about years where Republicans couldn't field candidates, you know, and I read this to prepare us for the challenges of where we are, because we don't have a deep bench. And so when people get upset about not having candidates for everything, I'm like, well, that's also one of the challenges of being small right now. And we have to build as we go, and it's going to be hard. But if we don't catch the winds when they blow in our direction, we will not make progress. And okay, part of that is getting reasonable people to run for office. And I'll tell you that although I'm seeing a lot more awareness and engagement around politics, it's still very difficult for people to make that choice to put their name on the ballot. And I think that's something we're going to have to push the next few months, is how to get more people signing up, because we have to have great people step up.
Agreed.
So yeah, let's talk about that deep bench then. It's something that Arden and I have touched on, you know, in past podcasts, but, you know, is this a matter of building, you know, city council and school board ranks, so we build like the pipeline from, you know, the super local to the legislature level? Do we need to start thinking that kind of granularly in terms of developing that bench, or are we just going to pick, you know, like random involved Joes off the street, or What should we look for here?
Think there's a lot that we can do strategically. For example, looking at the municipal officers who have won in nonpartisan elections around the state. There's a sheriff in like Muskogee. I want to make sure I get the. There is a sheriff in rural Oklahoma who's a Democrat and is he's ready to run in a partisan race as long as it's the right Democratic Party. And I think what we need to do is find people who are on boards, who are in places of respect in little communities that are fed up with what's happening to their communities. And we need to be ready to reach out to them. And that means effective county party organizations working with us.
What does
Yeah,
the right Democratic Party look like, though? That's what kind of gives me concern.
Yeah, well, let me give some space to the other leaders here.
Think that the reframing of our message, because I think, we got our tails handed to us with culture wars in 2024. And, my values haven't changed, but there's a way to have the conversations with rural Democrats and rural Republicans that say, you know what, I'm here for the Oklahoma taxpayer. I don't care what you do at home, but if you pay taxes, you get to be a part of, the Oklahoma voice, and everybody deserves a seat at that table. And what jobs look like is sort of the same across the state. And what we're about is jobs for everybody, and instead of pivoting towards culture war stuff, we've got to focus on, jobs, putting food on the table. Can you retire when you want to? Can you go to the doctor when you want to? Do you get to pick who that doctor is? These are the messages that people are asking to hear, and that's all they care about, at this point in time. But we're losing with it, in my opinion, with culture war issues, but we should not change our values in supporting people of all different backgrounds and stripes. But we should argue that everybody who's an Oklahoma citizen deserves a seat at the common sense table.
Yeah, and I think the deep we're gonna let our chairman deal with municipal elections for now. Thank goodness we've got I'm laser focused on Senate candidates, and I know Rep. Provenzano and Leader Munson are on House candidates, and we're collaborating with each other, and we're all gonna work together on that. But I'll say, we are trying to put in place systems that are better for candidates who sign up in seats that are long odds, that are places where they might be serving as a champion of democracy, not necessarily running to win. And what that means, what do they need? What kind of support do they need? Because we don't want them to feel left alone. So, like the last cycle, we tried some of that, and it meant we had a close relationship with our candidate based in McAllister. He didn't think he was going to win that race. It was like a 80% Trump seat, but his goal was to gain 3 or 4 points, and he felt connected to us because we were a resource for him. We were willing to show up. And we certainly couldn't spend a bunch of money on his race because we had other ones we were more likely to win, but we supported him in other ways that meant he now feels more invested overall. And I think if we can use races as a way to build our movement and build our connection to people, it's a huge commitment on the part of candidates, but at the same time, for them to feel like they're a part of something as well.
All right, so what do we need to do now? Boots on the ground, what are our action items? Tell us what to do.
Well, I think we need to have statewide messaging again. And one of the things we're committed to do in the Oklahoma Democratic Party is to reach out to all the rural newspapers with regular columns. And I want people like good old-fashioned Democrats like Cal Hobson and Joe Dorman out there writing pieces and talking to folks who maybe
David
feel like the party
Perryman, we
won't.
need to get
David Perryman is,
David Perryman out of the
yes.
mothballs.
I know. I gotta get that guy. I gotta sit down with that man. And we put those voices back into the mix, and remind people that that the Democratic Party's still there, and we want to be a presence in those communities again.
Ben Loring, Big
Yeah.
Loring.
Oh, Ben Loring. Yeah.
Ooh.
gosh.
I mean, I think, you know, there's some easy things for people to do. Of course, we're always, all of us are recruiting donations because of our infrastructure we're building. Amplifying messages on social media. You can't believe how much political messaging is suppressed on places like Facebook. Looking at the numbers, I mean, we need people to share messages, to share our content, and don't assume people are seeing what we're posting because they're not. So sharing. And then the other thing is just to get behind a candidate. Even if you don't have someone in your immediate area that's running, find candidates you can believe in and help them. I just went Wednesday to a funeral for an amazing Democratic volunteer, Liz Wilson, who was involved with Edmond Democratic Women and was super active in multiple campaigns. She was the first non-family, non-friend that showed up to a volunteer day for me. I can't believe how much that encouraged me and validated me as a candidate. And there's just not that many people who are willing to put it out there and really show up for candidates. And you can make a big difference with even an hour or two a month can really boost a candidate. So I encourage people to plan now how they can get engaged with that.
I'll say I have people signing up to volunteer with me and I'm like, well, I'm getting ready to head out to knock doors here in a month or so, but let me connect you to not only me, but the party in case they have stuff going on right now that you can help with. And then, you know, and it'll all kind of flow to the middle and we'll all be moving forward. You know, if I don't have something right now, I mean, number one, I should always have something, kind of like your mother says, there's always some place in your house you can clean, but there's always something to do. But if I don't, I need to know where to pivot somebody to, you know, or if their superpower is data entry, well, you got to go over here, you know, that sort of thing. So, and I think that's kind of what I hope to build with the party and with the Senate as well. Just a bank of volunteer opportunities.
Excited because we haven't had a conversation like this in a long time. And the fact that we're talking about this now, this historical moment when we have all these opportunities, feels like, you know, it's the right tools at the right time.
Yeah. I'm going to have to hop off.
Yeah. Okay.
I think probably we should wrap up for everybody's sake. I know we're kind of keeping folks long. So, but let's do this again.
Yes.
For real. Hey. Like we need to do this again. And then, talk with each of you individually and then let's go to the districts. Like I think the Observer wants to do that as well. Right. Like let's take it to the streets and let's get things done. I think we're happy. I'll try and be quick, but like, you know, on our part, like, you know, the media, like independent outlets like the Observer, you know, we have a stake in this as well. And so we are invested in helping this along. But thank you all for being with us today. This was really exciting. Thank you so much. We will do this again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you.
but you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.